Welcome to Quirky News, a new segment from the My Nuclear Life podcast. In these bonus episodes, we will explore stories we come across in our research, which don't really have enough material to make a full episode, but are still really interesting. Some we will drop in your feed as bonus episodes like this one, and some we will put on Patreon. So head over to patreon.com/mynuclearlife to find unreleased interviews with our guests and more future quirky news. In this bonus episode of My Nuclear Life, our researcher, Lexi Weghorn, joins me for a great story, which was found in our local newspaper, the La Crosse Tribune in La Crosse, Wisconsin. I would like to encourage you to send us stories from your local area. Before we begin, I would like to make a small correction. There are a couple of times I mentioned nuclear missiles in relationship to Volk Field when I actually mean nuclear bombs. Sorry about that. Also, please don't think because we joke about this story, we don't take nuclear war or nuclear bombs seriously. We do. It's just after 5 decades, we were able to find the humor in this story and in the situation. Are you ready for your quirky news story?
I am.
All right. So a neighbor of mine named Bruce, after he heard the podcast, gave me this story, and I thought you had to hear it.
I'm excited.
Okay. I'm going to read most of it. It's from the La Crosse Tribune. I will not give you the title because it'll totally give away the story. It's from January 30th, 2009, from Chris Hubick from the La Crosse Tribune.
Okay.
First, we're going to paint the scene for you. Dan Barry looked out of his cockpit at the snow-swept runway. With his squadron assembled at Volk Field, he was second in line for takeoff. In the bay of his F-106A jet was an 812-pound Genie missile, armed with a live nuclear warhead. The 27-year-old lieutenant believed a nuclear war had begun.
Oh my God.
Right?
In La Crosse? Really?
Yeah. So, okay, he's at Volk Field, and Volk Field is near Camp Douglas, which is about 55 miles east of La Crosse.
Okay.
So it's not that far away.
Yeah, really.
So if you take that road towards Toma, you're going to get there. So if you're driving east towards Madison, you're going to pass Volk Field. And it's controlled by the Wisconsin National Guard.
Okay.
But it sounds like a movie, right? Like an opening movie sequence.
The live nuclear warhead? Oh my God.
Yes. Yes.
How did he get that?
Oh, you'll see. All right. So this wasn't recently. This was in 1962.
Okay.
If that makes you feel better, you know how it ends.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the height of the Cold War, and a few days earlier, President John Kennedy had informed the nation that the Soviet missile silos had been discovered in Cuba, and diplomatic relations were strained. So this is during the Cuban Missile Crisis. Mm-hmm. So that makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah, that's about when I would have guessed if I had to.
I should have made you guess. Yeah. So bombers were flying around-the-clock sorties, and the Air Force was on the highest alert in its history. This was the real thing the pilots had been told. So could you imagine? Like, this is real.
Was that just the pilots at Volk Field? Like, or
no.
Around the country?
Around the country. Like, this is real.
Wow.
Everything.
Okay.
Like, in the 6 decades since the advent of nuclear weapons, there have been known accidental detonations. There were many near misses, and this was one of the strangest. So
I'm excited to see why.
I was going to say, are you intrigued now?
I'm very intrigued.
I'm going to tell you a little bit about the Cuban Missile Crisis, if you didn't know. So on October 14th, 1962, American spy planes captured images of Soviet missile silos under construction on the island nation of Cuba, which is less than 100 miles from the continental U.S. I mean, it's understandable that we freaked out a little bit.
Definitely.
With the world superpowers in a nuclear stare down, the young and untested Kennedy began back-channel negotiations with the more experienced Soviet leader, Nikita Khrushchev. Meanwhile, Kennedy was under pressure from his own military commanders to strike first, of course.
Yeah, strike first, ask questions later.
Right, exactly. So on October 22nd, Kennedy went on TV to reveal the threat to the American people. That night, the Air Force was put on DEFCON 3 for the first time since the defense condition system had been established.
Wow.
There are 5 DEFCONs.
Okay. Has it been that high since, do you know? Or, like, is that the highest it's been?
I think... Nope. DEF CON 3 is the highest we've been.
Solid.
Yep. So, oh, this is nice. Okay, the DEF CONs are DEF CON 5. That's the lowest. That's normal readiness. It's okay. The exercise term is called fade out. It's the lowest state of readiness. I thought it was the other way. Like DEF CON 1 was the lowest, but DEF CON 5 is the lowest.
Yeah, I thought so too.
It's normal readiness. So on a normal day, we'd be on DEF CON 5. Mm-hmm. You're going to love the exercise terms. DEF CON 4 is double take. Okay. It's the increased intelligence, watch, and strength and security measures, which is the readiness is above normal readiness. Mm-hmm. DEF CON 3, roundhouse.
We were at roundhouse.
We were at roundhouse. It increased in force readiness above that required for normal readiness, which basically means that the Air Force is ready to mobilize in 15 minutes.
Okay.
And DEF CON 2, fast pace, the sure. next step to nuclear war, right? Fast pace makes sense. Armed forces ready to deploy and engage in less than 6 hours.
Okay.
Guessing that's boots on the ground in 6 hours.
Yeah.
And DEF CON 1, you're going to love... I would make you guess, but you'll never guess the exercise term for this.
Okay.
Cocked pistol.
That's fantastic.
I know. Nuclear war is imminent or has already started. Maximum readiness, immediate response.
Maximum readiness for war has already started.
Yes.
I would hope so.
Yeah. DEF CON 2 was called during the Cuban Missile Crisis. The Strategic Air Command was ordered to DEF CON 2, and the rest of the U.S. Armed Forces remained at DEF CON 3.
Okay.
And then during the Persian Gulf War in 91, the Joint Chiefs of Staff declared DEF CON 2 in the operating phases of Operation Desert Storm. So this was the only time that... Wait, let me scan real quick. So Strategic Air Command has been placed on DEF CON 3, but this was the only time that the Air Force was put on DEF CON 3.
Okay.
According to the protocol, so this is back to the article. Mm-hmm. According to the protocol, 161 interceptors carry nuclear weapons were dispersed from their bases to small airfields around the country.
And we got one of them.
Yes, yes. So usually the base in Wisconsin doesn't have the nuclear missiles, but because of DEF CON 3, the planes were moved to smaller fields all over the country so that they could be ready to take off.
Okay, so like it was flown here and then he was ready to take off again should he need to?
Yes.
Okay.
That's how Barry and two squadrons from Selfridge Air Force Base in Michigan ended up at Volk Field.
Okay.
What's their mission, you ask? Their mission was to intercept and destroy Soviet bombers before they could strike U.S. cities. In addition to conventional air-to-missiles, and for the first time ever, each jet carried a single nuclear rocket.
Wow. Were they expecting them to come from Canada? Why were they so far north?
Ah, so
we're getting there.
We're getting there, but essentially they expect the Soviet bombers to come over the North Pole.
Okay.
About midnight on October 25th, a guard at a Duluth Air Force Base spotted a shadowy figure climbing a fence. Assuming sabotage, which war planners considered a likely scenario, the guard shot at the intruder and set off the sabotage alarm, which was wired to alarm systems at nearby bases.
Okay.
So the way it works is, because I thought, Duluth, that's in Minnesota. What does that have to do with the Wisconsin base?
Right.
So the Duluth Air Defense Sector is in Minnesota, but they also provide command and control to most of Minnesota, and in parts of western Wisconsin.
Oh, interesting.
Yep. I learned a lot about the military Air Force control systems when I looked at this article. So they thought it was sabotage at Duluth. Mm-hmm. They set off this alarm, but at Volk Field, the wrong alarm rang out.
What alarm was it then?
Ah. So... you can guess because the guy was on the tarmac with a nuclear bomb ready in his airplane.
I suppose.
The squadron pilots were sleeping at the base when they heard the clack-on. I'm guessing that's
whatever
just...
that is.
Yeah, I'm guessing that's just a bell like you hear in, I don't know.
Sure. Yeah. Military bell.
A military bell, yeah. That's really loud so it wakes you up. Mm-hmm. They had been told the threat was real, Barry recalls. There would be no practice.
Wow.
The pilots...
So it was a sabotage signal from the one base, but for however reason it got mixed up and sent as a nuclear alarm to
Volk. One,
to Volk Field? Okay.
Yep.
Can't imagine how that would happen.
No idea. So the pilots scrambled to their fighters. Their mission was to get airborne and look for Soviet bombers coming over the North Pole.
Okay.
The way Barry remembers it, he was second in line to take off when he saw a truck speeding towards them, lights flashing. False alarm.
Mm.
So he was on the tarmac, ready to take off, and a truck comes to stop him.
Yeah, wow.
You know, the question becomes, like, why in the world weren't they radioed from the control tower?
Right.
So that's where I kind of went into a rabbit hole that this is where the Duluth Air Defense Sector thing comes in.
Okay.
Because Duluth was in charge of controlling the planes in Wisconsin because Wisconsin didn't have a command, a control tower.
Okay.
It would be more than 25 years before he learned what had triggered the warning. The intruder in Duluth turned out to be a bear.
No. Oh, that's terrible. Bear almost causes nuclear war.
And that is the title of the article. False Alarm, How a Bear Nearly Started a Nuclear War.
I love that. It's perfect.
It is. It is.
That's just insane.
Yes.
And bears not done that before? I just can't imagine them not being ready for a bear in Duluth.
Or how do you mistake a bear for a person? Or how do you not see, like, you're going to shoot at something before you even are close enough to know it's a bear and not a person?
Right. Shoot first, ask questions later, I suppose. But yeah. It just seems like a shadowy figure. A bear is just so much not human-shaped still. I don't understand how they didn't think it was a bear.
So much bigger.
Right?
So the story was outlined in declassified Air Force documents reported by Stanford University professor Scott Sagan in his 1993 book, The Limits of Safety. Unfortunately, Sagan uncovered multiple nuclear mishaps or near mishaps, but said the Volk Field event jumped out as a worrisome and bizarre incident.
Definitely.
While there was no actual Soviet threat, Sagan said a nervous pilot believing the U.S. was under attack could have mistaken a friendly aircraft for an invading bomber. And even though the interceptors did not carry offensive weapons, a crash with an armed nuclear warhead could have also been catastrophic.
Yeah, for sure.
This story never gained much local notice. Anti-nuclear and peace activists picked up on it, and it proliferated, usually unsourced, on the internet, where it took on a whiff of urban legend.
Yeah, I can see that.
I mean, if I heard this story online and someone said, oh, a bear nearly caused a nuclear accident, I'd be like, cite your source.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, no way, cite your source. And they'd be like, no, it's just this thing I've heard. I'd be like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the interesting thing. No one working at Volk Field remembers the event, said Chief Master Sergeant Greg Cullen.
Oh, mass hallucination of, almost nuclear war.
I mean, it's been decades on.
That's true.
Lieutenant Colonel Tim Donovan, spokesman for the Wisconsin National Guard, which maintains the airfield, said the story has surfaced from time to time, but he never knew whether it was true. Even the men involved didn't learn the whole story for many years.
So they didn't learn that it was a bear for so many years, or like that the signals got mixed up or anything?
Nothing. They didn't learn anything. So Barry, now 73 and living near Seattle, retired from the Air Force in 1986 as a colonel. Initially, he said, the pilots assumed snow had sorted out the alarm system. Later, they heard it was a drunk GI trying to sneak back onto the Duluth base. It wasn't until Sagan called him that he learned it was a bear. As Sagan wrote, the incident would be almost comical if it wasn't part of a pattern of near misses.
Mm-hmm.
That was serious business, Barry said. We'd never flown with a nuke on board. It was really serious. I can remember almost expecting to see inbound nuclear missiles.
Yeah. I mean, it's comical, I suppose, because of the way it happened, but still the fact that there was a live nuclear warhead. That's just mind-boggling, and I can't imagine it'd be very funny for the people involved.
No, especially if the plane had crashed.
Right? Or, you know, just anything else had gone wrong.
Yes. So,
that's crazy.
That's our quirky news. We hope you enjoyed this first episode of Quirky News. Remember to listen to My Nuclear Life and send us your quirky news stories at mynuclearlife@protonmail.com. I'm Shelley Lesher, and this has been Quirky News.